The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston, your guest host for today's show. Mr. Stephen Fleury has a packed day of activities with the campers today, the summer educational program. That program goes for about 3 weeks every year in the month of July here at our headquarters campus in Edmond, where teens come from all around the world. And over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of restrictions, but it seems like we're able to get more of the international campers in as well. So Mr. Fleury's over a number of activities and is spending time, especially more time with them today. On today's show, we'll get through quite a bit of news. And then in the second segment, I'd like to talk more about the James Webb Space Telescope, comment more on some of the images that were released yesterday, give you a little bit of a tour through each of those pictures as well. Now, the big breaking news this morning is that the inflation numbers are in and the rate of inflation keeps rising. This month, the month of June, it was up 9.1% over the year before. So the previous month, I believe it was 8.6. So the pace is not slowing down. It keeps rising. It's getting worse. And this administration, the Biden administration, won't address it. They continue to ignore it, to dismiss it. This is what Joe Biden said just yesterday. This is clip one.
We are suffering from inflation imposed as a consequence of what's going on in Ukraine, but we have the lowest rate of almost every major nation in the world.
Blame Putin, blame the war in Ukraine. Never mind that those inflation numbers started rising as soon as he came into office. And then he says a lie there. We have the lowest rate of inflation of almost every major nation in the world. That is not true. I think only the United Kingdom might be rising at a higher rate than the United States. But the United States is up there, getting close to nations like Venezuela, getting close to those Soviet, those communist countries. And again, like I said, those numbers didn't start rising, I think, under President Trump. It was 1.3%. And then since Biden came in, it's been, I want to say it was just a couple months into his administration, it started going 4, 5, and then all of this year, it's been 8% year over year. And then that rate, I mean, they always just take it year over year. So, I mean, if you look at it in 2 years, you have to compare it, okay, where are we now to where Biden came in 2 years earlier, and you're going to get things like 15, 16%. I wanted to comment a little bit more about the crisis in Sri Lanka. Because of what's happening, of course, the United States with inflation, you look at Sri Lanka, and we've made this point in the Trumpet brief and at our website about how this is just a foretaste of what's coming to a lot of Western nations. The New York Times reports about all the leadership changes there. The president fled the country. No one knew who was in charge. And then the prime minister took over. They still didn't know who was running the country. So these protesters raided the presidential palace. The Times writes, daily life in Sri Lanka has been upended for months, with the country essentially depleted of foreign currency reserves necessary to buy essential imports. The prices of food and medicine have soared, power cuts have become the norm, and public transportation is often suspended to shore up fuel supplies. Whoever runs the country next inherits a nation that will be difficult to stabilize. The leadership will need to earn the trust of protesters and convince lenders, including steadfast allies like India, that they can dig the nation out of its economic hole. So what happened in Sri Lanka? What happened to this tiny country? I believe it's about 20, 22 million people off the southeast coast of India. At the Trumpet, Abraham Blondeau writes in his article titled The Sri Lankan Revolution, talks about how Bible prophecy indicates that these sorts of events would start happening in nations, and it points specifically to the modern descendants of Israel, and you can learn about that in our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. India, Sri Lanka, they were part of the British Empire for a long time. Abraham writes, Trumpet assistant managing editor Richard Palmer, well, now I'm quoting Mr. Palmer, says, perhaps the most surprising thing about it is that so many of the factors behind it, behind the collapse of Sri Lanka, are present also in the United States. The crisis shows how things that we know are bad, inflation, debt, societal division, can become nation-destroying problems. Mr. Blondeau writes, the crisis in Sri Lanka has been building for decades and is self-inflicted. I wanted to comment just about some of these things that the government there did to cause this problem. So many of the problems that we see in our nation, like with COVID lockdowns, they're self-inflicted. And that doesn't mean the people are more righteous. Those leaders are in power because the people allow that, because the people are unrighteous. And they don't like the fruits of that. They don't like those leaders, so they rise up against them. But nobody on the ground level is making the changes they need to make to bring blessings to a nation. Mr. Blondeau writes about some of the dictates from the government in Sri Lanka, the president, before he fled. He didn't resign. He just fled. Talks about how this all everything he was doing lines up with the goal of these climate change, I can't remember what he calls them in this article, these ideologues when it comes to climate change, and how they want to implement these radical changes to the way we run farms, to the way we do business. And in practice, or not in practice, but in theory, a lot of that sounds good, talking about shifting to more organic farming. But the way this world is set up, you can't just flip that over in 1 minute and say, okay, we're done with that. It's time to do this, and it's going to work. I mean, we have to feed megacities of millions of people, and we're planting food on hundreds of thousands of acres of land. Farms weren't meant to be that big. Cities weren't meant to be this big. Everything is out of balance because this is man's world. This is Satan's world, and man is doing things apart from God's way, so they have to come up with different solutions to counter that. But now this government gets in power and they say, well, we're just going to change all of that in you know, a few seconds. You can't use that fertilizer anymore. You can't use that type of grain. This is an article from Brendan O'Neill at Spiked Online. He writes, Sri Lanka and the global revolt against the laptop elites. In Sri Lanka, we are witnessing a rebellion not only against corrupt government officials, but also against the dangerously out-of-touch worldview of the international technocracy. He says, Sri Lanka's economic crisis is incredibly serious. The nation is bankrupt. Inflation is rampant. Food prices have risen by 80%. He says, and then he talks about how a lot of this was in the making for decades, and then you get to COVID lockdowns, and that's just what made it happen even faster, the catalyst for bringing all of these crises to the surface. The lockdowns crushed tourism. That's a big industry in Sri Lanka. Farming is a big industry. Then it's an island nation. They start having supply chain problems on top of the fact that they're bankrupt. But as he notes in this article, America's economic position is even worse if you look at the debt to GDP ratio, how much we're spending versus how much we're bringing in. And the United States benefits from being that reserve currency, so they have some, it just gives them a little more stability to just keep kicking the can down the road. But eventually, you can't keep running away from those problems. Brendan O'Neill writes, perhaps we should have thought carefully and talked seriously about the potential consequences of suspending economic life before taking such rash experimental action. The other facet of Sri Lanka's crisis we must confront is the role played by eco-ideology. It is unquestionable that Sri Lanka's suffering has been inflamed and exacerbated by its determination to become a net-zero nation. A nation of fertilizer-free farming, a good environmentally responsible nation that will please the green elites in global institutions. So they were running, the government there was running an experiment, essentially. The president who had fled, he wrote an article for the World Economic Forum, and this is what they put on their website. Sri Lanka Prime Minister, this is how I will make my country rich by 2025. So in 3 years, he was planning to make this country rich. Really, it was probably about lining his own pockets. That's when you get down to it. So many of these green activists have a lot of interests or a lot of investments in the companies that they want these governments to sign contracts with. So Sri Lanka and the World Economic Forum say, do this for your country. This is going to make you wealthy. This is going to make you rich. And a lot of these nations, I think Europe is probably the biggest hypocrite when it comes to doing this. They like to make these changes and talk about how they're saving the planet and how green they are and how wonderful they are, but they can't function, they can't sustain their quality of life without countries like Russia and China and in a smaller part the United States using coal, using oil. So that's great, Germany, that's great, Netherlands, if you can afford to farm that way, if you can afford to use solar panels and wind turbines. At the end of the day, though, you're just doing that for optics because you can't get off of that dirty energy, as you call it. It's the dirty truth about green energy, and they like to look more righteous than the rest of the world, but the reality is they're reliant on these other nations doing the things that they preach so heavily against. O'Neill says, in 2019, Sri Lanka produced 3.5 billion kilograms of rice. In 2021, following the fertilizer ban, it is thought that rice production fell by 43%. So they're not producing food. They're not able to feed their people. They're not able to export food. They don't have the money to import. O'Neill says, Sri Lanka shows us what happens when policy is shaped according to the desires and prejudices of the new elites rather than the needs of ordinary people. Lockdown may have been a boon for the laptop elites and for some billionaires, but it was incredibly harmful for many working class people in the West and for millions of hard-up people in the global South. The green ideology may provide the new elites with a sense of purpose, flattering their narcissistic delusion that they are saving the planet from a man-made heat death, but it hits the pockets of workers in the West who will end up paying for the net zero madness, and it inflames hunger and destitution in those parts of the world not yet as developed as the West. From the Canadian truckers who revolted against livelihood-destroying COVID rules, to the Dutch farmers rising up against their government's mad eco-policies, from Italian taxi drivers protesting against the rise in fuel prices, to the mass protests in Albania against food and fuel prices following the lockdown and the war in Ukraine, popular protests are breaking out across the world. The government of Sri Lanka may have been the first to fall, but it seems unlikely it will be the last. That article that I mentioned that the Prime Minister wrote for the World Economic Forum, you can't find it anymore. They scrubbed it from their website. If you look for his article titled, "This is how I will make my country rich by 2025, it brings up a little warning on their website. Sorry, but we can't find the page you're looking for. They can't admit they're wrong, so they just scrub the history. It's Orwellian. This point that O'Neill makes, I thought was fascinating because at the trumpet, just before all the COVID lockdowns, we published a special magazine, a special edition, and the title on that cover is The Age of Protest, and that was in February 2020, just before all the COVID lockdowns, just before these nations would be upended. And again, based on what Bible prophecy says will happen to our nations. Lockdowns for COVID, it was self-inflicted. And you look now at what we know about the virus, and it was not nearly as bad as they said it would be. I saw this story on the internet and just thought, what a clown show these last 2 years have been. This is from Outkick Sports. It's titled, Cyclist Wins Ninth Stage of Tour de France After Testing Positive for COVID-19. So Bob Jungels of Luxembourg tests positive for COVID-19. Usually that means you're prohibited from participating in the sport. I suspect he's quadruple jabbed or whatever it is, so he can travel to France and he can participate in the sport. Test positive for COVID. Boy, if you test positive for COVID 18 months ago, quarantine camps, police at your door, the government calling you on your iPhone, telling you to check in to make sure that you're quarantining at home, you can't leave the house. Then this article, let me just read from it here. Instead of seeing the positive result and keeping him from racing, a panel of doctors looked at his sample and deemed his viral load was low enough for him to ride. In other words, doctors determined Youngles was not contagious to others. So everyone else the world over is taking these tests and getting what we know now would probably be false positives, forced to quarantine, can't travel, prohibited from working, can't hug your spouse, can't visit your family members in the hospital. And all it takes now is the doctors to evaluate you a little bit more and say, you're not contagious. That test's very sensitive. Don't pay any attention to it. And the COVID was so bad that this cyclist managed to participate and win the ninth leg of the Tour de France. That's how bad COVID is. You can't do that when you get the flu. And he's got COVID. Doctor, ignore the test, participate, wins that leg of the race. What a crippling disease it is. And that doesn't mean it's not real. It affects everybody differently. But do we lock down the world for it? Do we shut down our nations? This was a clip from a Philadelphia Phillies player. We played Novak Djokovic's clip about him not wanting to get the vaccine and finally able to participate in Wimbledon. And it seems like a lot of athletes silently agree with him, and quite a few more are getting more vocal about it. This is a player, he plays baseball for the Philadelphia Phillies. This is clip two.
You know, some people say you're letting your team down. Teammates have supported you, though. So how do you feel about it?
I mean, yeah, it's an extremely unfortunate situation. Obviously, my teammates know how I feel about them and how bad I want to be out there with them, but it's just unfortunate that I'm not able to make the trip.
What are your reservations with the vaccine?
I'm a healthy 31-year-old professional athlete that I just didn't feel a need to get it. I've had COVID a couple of times and super mild symptoms back when it first came out, and when it came time to decide whether I needed a vaccine or not, I talked with a couple of doctors that I knew and told them my story, and just really decided I didn't think I needed it. And I wasn't going to take it just because I was told to, basically. So
mm-hmm. Even if it meant not missing, because you're going to forfeit a good amount of salary.
Yeah, but I mean, what's money when I'm not going to let Canada tell me what I do and don't put in my body for a little bit of money? It's just not worth it.
Sorry, I should have set that up a little bit more. The Phillies are going to Toronto to play the Blue Jays. Toronto's in Canada. Can't get into Canada unless you're vaccinated. He's not making the trip to play in that series. He says, I'm not going to do it just because Canada says I have to. I'm a healthy 31-year-old. I've had COVID twice. Why do I need to? Why would I take that risk that I could get myocarditis? I'm a healthy 31-year-old. He says, I'm not going to be intimidated to take that. I'll take the pay cut for not playing those games. I don't know how often the Phillies play the Blue Jays. I think they're in different leagues, so it might not even be that often. But look at the leadership in places like Sri Lanka. Look at the leadership in the Netherlands, in Canada. How obnoxious it is. How totalitarian it is. And they just keep doubling down. They won't admit they're wrong, and they're leading their nations into the ground. A lot of it is intentional. Isaiah 3 and verse 12, as for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. The Bible describes what is happening to our nations in this end time. And the last 2 years, that is abundantly, abundantly clear. There is no hope in man. Mr. Palmer sent me this clip this morning of John Bolton, and I laughed out loud at this clip. Again, he's been in positions of power for decades. He's Republican. He betrays Donald Trump, and he's doing this interview, and he's talking to Jake Tapper, and Jake Tapper makes a comment. Jake Tapper is pretty much trying to say that Donald Trump organized a coup. It's a highly sophisticated plan, even though Donald Trump is supposed to be just the dumb orange man. He created this highly sophisticated plan to take over the U.S. government. Nobody knows what he was going to do. There's no evidence for it. John Bolton is arguing, well, he incited a riot, but I don't think there was like this grand coup attempt. And notice John Bolton's response to Jake Tapper. This is clip three.
I don't know that I agree with you, to be fair, with all due respect. One doesn't have to be brilliant to attempt a coup.
I disagree with that. As somebody who has helped plan coup d'etat,
yeah,
not here, but, you know, other places, it takes a lot of work.
What? You could tell he's a little insulted by that, because Jake Tapper says, well, you don't have to be brilliant to organize a coup. John Bolton's like, oh, yes, you do. I'm very smart. I've organized coups all over the place. It's very hard work. So he's a little annoyed by that. That is someone, obviously, we all know this happens. The CIA does this. It's the quiet part out loud. As somebody who has helped plan coup d'etat, not here, of course, but other places, it takes a lot of work. Well, there is a coup in the United States. I don't know if John Bolton is directly a part of it, but you can see it happening, and you've seen it happening the last 5 or 6 years. I just had to play that clip because I thought it was hilarious to hear him admit that and to say that live on air. Yeah, we plan coups all over the world. It's kind of what we do, and you have to be very brilliant to be able to do that. The Washington Times writes about Biden's wealthy and clueless, speaking of clueless, White House, and talks about the members of this administration who are raking it in financially. They're not qualified for their positions. And what do you expect the fruits to be? Skyrocketing? I'm tired of using that phrase. I'm just going to say inflation is out of control. I'll come up with some other way to describe it going up other than skyrocketing. It feels like I hear that word 40 or 50 times a day. But as average Americans are struggling, these globalists, if you want to call them that, in the Biden administration are cashing in. He talks about White House, or I'll just read the first paragraph here. It says, this White House is inhabited by revolving door careerists who got rich through decades of moving into a plum federal job, then out to a law firm, PR, lobbyist, consultant, and then back in again to burnish the resume. It's called losing touch with middle America and everyday hardship. So you just see, they get a job for Pfizer, they retire from Pfizer, they go work for the FDA, do all of these regulations that help Pfizer, then they're out of the FDA, and then they get back on the board of Pfizer. And how many shares of that company do they own? Well, once they're private citizens, it doesn't matter anymore, does it? Ron Klain, he's the White House Chief of Staff, net worth of $12 million. Jennifer Granholm, she's the Energy Secretary that keeps telling you to buy a $60,000 electric car. She was heavily invested in an electric vehicle bus manufacturer. And when she didn't sell her shares until, and this is illegal, she missed the deadline for when she should have sold shares of that company. She waited until some of these policies passed that would help these electric vehicle companies. She profited, once she sold these shares, $1.6 million. Her net worth, along with her husband's, is about $8 million. Brian Deese, he's the one that you hear again talking about, this is Putin's fault, Putin. He used to work for BlackRock, also worked for the World Economic Forum. He, it says, is worth over $2 million, or that's just his investment in one of these companies. Again, something he'd have to sell. Jen Psaki, worth $2 million. And you look at these people, and it's making money isn't a problem. Donald Trump has billions of dollars, but these people are not wealthy until they become politicians. Janet Yellen, another one where you just wonder, how has she been in government for so long? Who's voting for these people? She amassed over $7 million in 2019 to 2020, giving talks mostly to financial institutions, giving speeches in China, making $300,000 here and there, just cashing in on that name. She's routinely being put in positions when there's a Democrat in office. Anthony Blinken talks about how he's worth $10 million. Again, all of these people cashing in on their positions of government, exploiting people. And Amos talks about that in chapter 6 and 7, how those in power are exploiting the poor. Isaiah 59, verse 7 and 8 says, "Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. The way of peace they know not, and there is no judgment in their goings. They have made them crooked paths. Whosoever goes therein shall not know peace." If you want to follow those ways, well, expect turmoil. Expect inflation. Expect chaos. Expect food shortages. It's just cause and effect. And these leaders, allowed to lead because of the sins of the people, as this book talks about the United States and Britain in prophecy, blessings and cursings. I wanted to touch on, just talking about corrupt leadership, some of the commentary on the Roe versus Wade and the abortion argument in the United States. They always gin up these stories that on its face should raise some red flags, but it's very provocative and it's very emotional, and they use it. One is this story of this 10-year-old who allegedly was raped and then wanted to get an abortion but couldn't get in Ohio because their laws were so strict. And this story, no one can find a criminal report. None of the police departments in Ohio say, well, if a minor has been raped, that has to be filed. There has to be a criminal complaint. It's illegal not to file a criminal complaint. That's not there. There's no evidence, or that no one has been investigated for committing this crime. No one has reported it. So whatever doctor this girl saw, that doctor would be legally obligated to report that crime, and there's nothing like that. So somehow this story just emerges out of some podunk town in Ohio and makes it to the White House. This is clip 4.
Some of the states don't allow for exceptions for rape or incest. This isn't some imagined horror. It's already happening. Just last week, it was reported that a 10-year-old girl was a rape victim in Ohio. 10 years old. And she was forced to have to travel out of the state to Indiana to seek to terminate the pregnancy and maybe save her life. That last part is my judgment. 10 years old. 10 years old. Rape, 6 weeks pregnant.
I mean, that happens. This is the devil's world, and there are evils like that. But they're supposed to have more resources than anyone else in the world. They have trillions of dollars at their disposal to investigate things. And no one at that White House, okay, well, let's just see if we can at least find a criminal report. They don't fact check it. They don't want to fact check it. They just want the emotion. They want that story because it helps move their agenda. And you'll see people when they debate abortion, they'll say, okay, well, you have abortion only for incest and rape. And then the pro-abortion people will say, oh, well, it needs to be more than that. Now, two wrongs don't make a right. But look at how awful that is, to take a story that isn't proven and to use that to as an excuse to push, you know, I can't remember what the phrase is, just abortion on demand up to birth. In Virginia, Governor Northam wanted them after birth, post-birth abortions. I mean, how demented are the leaders in our country? That doesn't happen anywhere other than China and North Korea. And then they won't comment on the organized terror attacks on these crisis pregnancy centers. I think I read that it was something like 30 of these crisis pregnancy centers have been firebombed or vandalized. Organized terrorism, left-wing terrorism. Merrick Garland hasn't made a peep about it. Those pregnancy centers are there if you get you're pregnant and you're not prepared for it. They're there to help you. They're there to counsel you, to encourage you to keep the baby, to help you feed it, to give you clothes, to give you financial support. They're there to help. Elizabeth Warren cannot stand that. Listen to clip six.
In Massachusetts right now, those crisis pregnancy centers that are there to fool people who are looking for pregnancy termination help outnumber true abortion clinics by 3-1. We need to shut them down here in Massachusetts, and we need to shut them down all around the country. You should not be able to torture a pregnant person like that.
Shut down the clinics that help people through pregnancies. And we need more abortion clinics so those people can just terminate their pregnancies rather than offer help. In her deranged world, it's better to just snuff out that life. And she says that those crisis pregnancy centers are torturing those women. And they won't talk about how torturous abortion is, what that does to a female body, what that does to the mind of that woman, even their ability to get pregnant again. They won't talk about that torture. They won't talk about the torture that those babies go through when they're dismembered, sold on the black market to places like University of Pittsburgh so they can use skin grafts for their experiments. They won't talk about the Nazi-like experimentation. If you want to help someone that's pregnant, you're torturing them. Don't torture them with a baby. How horrible is this country? This is a clip of a Berkeley law professor. She's at a Senate hearing. And this woman, it's not hard to believe anymore that she is an educator. This is the norm in America. And it's been there for decades, and now it's all surfacing. This is a Berkeley law professor at a Senate hearing yesterday. This is clip number 8.
Do you think a baby that is delivered alive has value?
Yes.
Do you think that a baby that is not yet born has value?
I believe that a person with a capacity for pregnancy has value. They have intelligence. They have agency. They have
dignity. I'm talking about the baby.
And I'm talking about the person with the capacity for
pregnancy.
And
you're not answering the question.
I'm answering a more interesting question. Do you think that
a baby that is not yet born, let's say the day before this mother delivers, do you think that baby has value?
I think that the person with the capacity for pregnancy has value, and they should have the ability to control what happens to their lives.
Well, and I just note you refuse to answer the question.
I won't bother playing the clip where she explains what a person with the capacity to have pregnancy is. She gets in an argument with Senator Hawley. Hawley just says, well, can women get pregnant? What do you mean, people with capacity for pregnancy? And she just said, well, that's transphobic, and you're inciting people to violence. She teaches law at Berkeley. And I thought one of the more interesting parts of that clip, she says, well, I'm answering a question that's more interesting to me. Just will worship. I'll ask myself the questions. You don't wade into that territory. If she can say the baby has value the day after it's born, but can't say it has any value the day before, is that someone that should have any authority, any power? They have a lot in this country. And how do you explain it? Well, like we've been saying these past few weeks, America under attack. It's the only explanation for what's happening in this country. It's the only way to explain the way those people think, why they think that way. I wanted to talk a little bit about January 6th. I don't have a ton of time to go through that. I thought I would just mention talking about unrighteous rulers and how they're destroying this country. This is Joe Biden's Department of Justice. They are imprisoning trespassers from January 6th. This is a story about Pam Hemphill. She's a 69-year-old woman from Idaho who has cancer and no criminal history, has been sentenced to 2 months in prison by a D.C. judge for breaching the Capitol on January 6th and will surrender to California authorities on Tuesday. That is our government. They won't pay attention to the terrorists firebombing pregnancy centers. But this 69-year-old woman with breast cancer, she walked through an open door. She breached the Capitol 2 months in the D.C. prison, D.C. Gitmo. Well, we can go ahead and take a break. And once we return from that break, we'll talk a little bit about the James Webb Space Telescope. If you have any comments for the show, you can email those to td@thetrumpet.com. If you want to call and request any of the literature on today's show, you can call us at 1-866-930-3024, 1-866-930-3024. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
On yesterday's show, Mr. Fleury talked about the latest images from the James Webb Space Telescope. And these images that they released, five of them, I believe, one of them was just a kind of a graph. So there are four pictures. And these were all pictures that Hubble had taken, I think, decades earlier. And you see the contrast with the clarity from the James Webb Telescope. But what a wonderful contrast it was to talk about an inspiring story. When you look at all the horrible news in this world, it just makes you want to look up, and you can't ignore that news. You can't put your head in the sand and ignore that. This world has to be warned about these evils, but there has to be that hope and there has to be that vision. It reminded me of the end of the musical that we show here, Celtic Throne, and you go from this song that's conflict and there's a lot of flashing lights and destruction, and it's very jarring. And then you move into the next song, which is Tomorrow's Light, and there's images of the universe, and the music is beautiful. And what a relief it is to look up into the heavens. Now, these images, you'll see the first one on your screen. That image, and what's so wonderful about these pictures, and what's so nice that they make these available for download, is that they are massive. I think each of them are about, you know, over 12,000 pixels by 12,000 pixels. That's 12K. And I love getting the coffee table books for the Hubble images or anything space related. But with these, you can't have that printed and get the splendor of these images. You have to open it on your computer and you have to zoom in to every little dot. If you want to download those, they're free. You can visit webtelescope.org, W-E-B-B, telescope.org. Download these images and explore them. Dive into the universe here. Zoom in. Look at each of these dots. If it's a dot that has spikes on it, that means it's a star. It's closer. But if it's something that's more faded, you're looking at galaxies. You're looking at thousands of galaxies. These images are so stunning. I want to play the reaction from one of these NASA commissioners. She's talking about when she first started seeing these images. This is clip 9.
For me, earlier than this, that the first focused images that we took, where they were razor sharp, That for me was the one where I had the very emotional reaction of, oh my goodness, it works. And it works better than we thought. And shortly after that, we got a standard star so we could measure how much light was going through the telescope. And that's not pretty, it's just a star, but like, oh my gosh, it really does work. And so for me, definitely, it was the, I think, personally, I went and had an ugly cry, okay? I just, and yeah, because it works, what the engineers have done to build this thing, it is amazing.
It really seems like a miracle that this thing worked. As advanced scientifically as man has become, the how intricate that telescope is and how many things could go wrong. I watched a video about them transporting it, and they had to drive it through the streets of LA in this huge tube, and they had to keep recycling dry air through it because any little particle of dust or a fingerprint on a bolt could cause something to go wrong. And they're driving it through Los Angeles. They said they picked this route and they selected it. They drove through it in the middle of the night on the back of a semi truck, and they could only go about 10 miles an hour. It's so heavy. They filled every pothole along the way, which is a great service to the citizens of Los Angeles. But you think of how much time and effort has gone into producing this thing, and there it is, just being pulled by a semi truck through LA. And then a few days later, it's off on its way a million miles out into space. These images, we can pull up the first one there. This is SMACS0723, SMACS0723. This image was also taken by Hubble, I think in the early 2000s. It's the Hubble Deep Field. They pointed it at the same area of the sky. This is the one where it's just if you were to hold that grain of sand out at arm's length. We have a website there that we could maybe bring up where you see the Milky Way, and you zoom into this tiny, tiny little speck, 1/11 millionth of the sky. And here is this image with stunning galaxies. I think the cluster that they mentioned at the forefront, that is about 4.6 billion light years away. And then the images further back are 13.8 billion years or light years away. But you'll see on the screen here, just zooming into this little square, that is the image that Hubble took. 1/11 millionth of the sky. The telescope was open for 12 hours. Now with Hubble, it needed to be open for 6 days. So you wonder, well, what would happen if you just left James Webb open for 6 days? What would happen there? But they're just doing this to show, to contrast with Hubble, how much more advanced James Webb is. But you think about how little we'll be able to know from this. Little we'll be able to know. That picture there, as stunning as that is, 1/11 millionth of the sky, that telescope needed to be open for 12 hours. So if you wanted to get every little grain of sand of the entire sky, it would take like 5 million days of processing images. What if you miss something? There's hundreds of billions of stars in each of those little segments. The other image that they published, they're able to take pictures of a planet that was passing in front of a star. We don't need to show this one, but they could tell the content of the atmosphere based on how the light was going through it. And what's so amazing about this telescope is that it sees infrared light, a light the frequency is too low for our eyes to see. So Hubble couldn't see a lot of the things that Webb is picking up. You could put up the picture of the Southern Ring Nebula. This is a dying star. It's about 2,000 light years away. It's exploding. And what's amazing when you look at the Hubble image is you kind of see these faded things in the background and you can't tell if it's a star. Sometimes it's totally invisible. But when James Webb's images of the same nebula come in, you can see just off to the top left of this image a galaxy that makes it through. That infrared light is being picked up, and you see this galaxy that comes through all of that dust. And those aren't stars behind it. Those are galaxies. Just amazing, stunning images that brought that NASA employee to tears. The other one is called Stephan's Quintet. I'll just read this from their website. It says, Webb's view of this compact group of galaxies located in the constellation Pegasus pierced through the shroud of dust surrounding the center of one galaxy to reveal the velocity and composition of the gas near its supermassive black hole. Now scientists can get a rare look in unprecedented detail at how interacting galaxies are triggering star formation in each other and how the gas in these galaxies is being distributed. Again, those spiked points in that image are stars, but everything behind that, if you download that very high resolution image, you can see those are all galaxies back behind there. The last one, this one is just stunning. This is the Carina Nebula. Again, Hubble took a picture of this, and it's a beautiful image. And in Hubble's, you look at Hubble, and until you see James Webb, you think the Hubble one is just stunning. I mean, what a beautiful nebula. These are stars that are forming or dying, and there's these dust clouds, and they say this dust is moving at 5 million miles per hour as these stars are just exploding around it. You can see on the screen that the Hubble image in the top left there is stunning, but it's kind of blurry. And then you reveal what James Webb took of that same area, and the amount of detail is incredible. You're seeing those stars behind this nebula come through. And this one, this is just in our neighborhood. It's in the Milky Way. It's 7,600 light years away. But the range here, you see how it's like a bowl because of those stars blowing out there. And those mountain-like structures are 7 light years high. Just amazing images. And they said this one's especially exciting because we're seeing the development of a star in detail they've never seen before. There's details in there. One of them was explaining, she said, I've never seen something like that before. I don't even know what it is. So we're very excited to study that. And these, like I said, we're just getting out of our neighborhood at this point. And that deep field image, that's 13 billion light years away. What's in the dark spaces in that image? Well, what if you pointed even longer at those areas? How much more is out there? Are we just scratching the surface? Is it just a baby step? Isaiah 45 and verse 18, for thus says the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it, he has established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is none else. These scientists are giddy, and it's fun to watch how excited they are. But they're looking for another alien or something. They want to see if there's other life out there. Okay, well, what if you find that? So what? You're probably going to end up going to war with them anyway. That's just human nature. Where's the hope in that? This is pointing to God's handiwork, and they don't see it that way. But what an exciting, what an inspiring thing it is to see these images. Humanity needs to look up into the stars. You think about these news events that we cover and how selfish people are, how inwardly focused they are. Think about that with abortion, and people just won't see the big picture. The news coverage, there wasn't a lot of it. I thought millions of people would have been watching the release of these images yesterday. It was just tens of thousands. I saw that they put these images on the huge screens in Times Square in New York. Beautiful, massive LED screen, 70, 80 feet high. And someone was filming it, and no one is looking at them. I don't think you could even see real stars in New York City. The light pollution is so bad. And so they're putting it up on a skyscraper, and people still aren't even looking up at them. Everyone's just glued to their phones, staring down. Maybe they're staring at them on their phones. I highly doubt that. But that will give you some perspective. That will help you see the big picture, just how petty a lot of our problems are. I've been reading just some poetry, and I've always loved Rudyard Kipling. And you go through some of these poems, and they thought so differently. They really had deep imaginations. Just 100 years ago, he's kind of a cultural icon of the British Empire. You think about the cultural influencers today, they're not talking about uplifting things. They're not writing beautiful poetry that inspires. It's all about politics. It's all about me and what I want. That one of these Kipling poems, now it has some Protestantism mixed in there, but you think about his mindset going into writing this poem. It's called, and he wrote it in 1892, it's called When Earth's Last Picture is Painted. And we can go ahead and play the clip of that poem, clip number 10.
When Earth's last picture is painted, and the tubes are twisted and dried, when the oldest colors have faded, and the youngest critic has died, we shall rest, and faith we shall need it. Lie down for an aeon or two, till the master of all good workmen shall put us to work anew. And those that were good shall be happy. They shall sit in a golden chair. They shall splash at a 10-league canvas with brushes of comet's hair. They shall find real saints to draw from, Magdalene, Peter, and Paul. They shall work for an age at a sitting and never be tired at all. And only the master shall praise us, and only the master shall blame. And no one shall work for money, and no one shall work for fame, but each for the joy of the working. And each in his separate star shall draw the thing as he sees it, for the God of things as they are.
A lot to think about in that poem. He shall put us to work anew, the master of all good workmen. And he's talking about each person, but each for the joy of the working, and each in his separate star. They shall splash at a 10-league canvas with brushes of comet's hair. He's talking about painting. He's talking about creating and working. And the Kipling Society writes that he was inspired by this poem because he was looking at some art exhibits, and he thought, well, they just look so dull. And then he learned that the artists never leave their studio. They're working under artificial light, and they're using props. And he's encouraging them, well, get out and paint real things. Paint the colors as you see them in nature. The Kipling Society says, the true joy in life comes from dedication to whatever work is in hand, and that the task of the artist is to convey to others the excitement and wonder of an expanding world. Isn't that what those images do? And those are images painted by God. God created laws, and those laws, when they work, create these beautiful images. Psalm 19 and verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. You won't hear this message anywhere else. You won't hear what we talk about in this booklet, our awesome universe potential, anywhere else. What is the purpose of all of those stars up there? Hundreds, trillions of galaxies out there. Our minds can't grasp how vast the universe is. What is the meaning of all of that? Like Mr. Armstrong asks in Mystery of the Ages, do you ever ask yourself, who am I? What am I? Why am I? They're not asking those big questions. We played this clip yesterday, and I thought it'd be appropriate to play it again. This is from Mr. Gerald Fleury in that 2005 Key of David titled God's Space Program, clip 11.
Do you know that this world needs the comfort of God, and they seek comfort, and they seek fulfillment in all kinds of areas where they're never, ever going to find it? If you want real comfort and everlasting joy and be going around singing melodies, then you need to learn about God's amazing space plan. You need to learn about God's plan. Get that vision in your mind, and I'll tell you, your spirit is going to soar.
God's amazing space plan. Your spirit is going to soar. Look at those images. Study those scriptures in the Bible. Study this booklet, and your spirit will soar, like Mr. Fleury says. I'll conclude with an article from Mr. Hilliker in the latest Trumpet magazine. World events are hurtling toward the violent climax of man's rule on earth. Hopelessness and despair are spreading. While human life here deteriorates, while the suffering begins to touch even you and your family, look up. Like Webb, you will be pointing your vision towards something that will set your mind ablaze. Keep your eyes on what this telescope teaches and the majesty of what it reveals to us about the past and about the future if we have eyes to see. Look up. Have that vision. Think big. Allow your mind to be filled with those images, and it will make your spirit soar when you couple it with the Bible. When you read those scriptures, what is man? And the firmament shows God's handiwork. Request Our Awesome Universe Potential or email any comments to td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you very much for joining us on today's show. Mr. Stephen Fleury will be with you again tomorrow, and thank you very much for watching.